Welcome to week 17. I'm Kyle, the student of the game. To my right, my co-host Weasel, and a bittersweet note as the regular season in the NFL has ended, but we have playoffs. That's right, playoffs. It's time to win the game. Was that close?
Not really.
Because it's so hard to make it positive because he's so angry and negative, Jim Morris Sr., when he's getting... But you see where I was going, at least, right?
I do.
That's good enough. Anyways, here on the Student of the Game, let's talk about the playoff picture being set, how it got that way, who made it get that way with our end-of-season awards, and who will prevail and get beyond the first round. Big show, always the biggest show of the year. Let's go ahead and kick it off. Our first game this week will be the Colts, who visited the Buffalo Bills in what has now been referred to by, I forget who exactly it was, on the radio, but one radio announcer calling it the Siberia of the NFL with all the snow that took place during the game as the Colts get pwned 30-7 by the Bills. That's right, folks. The Curtis I should have been a painter plan, not working for the Colts. Yeah, I know they didn't need it and blah, blah, blah. I think the lack of momentum is going to affect them. Be bitter, but I remember a number of years ago when the Colts had a bunch of wins on their plate. They took a similar resting approach, and now they're here in this place, losing two games in a row the past 2 weeks. Bad place to be. Peyton Manning did make an appearance to try to at least stay somewhat warm, no pun intended. 14 completions, 18 attempts, 78%, 95 yards with an INT. Curtis Painter had 4 for 17 on the day. Brady Quinn numbers, baby. Woo. 24%, 39 yards. Fumble on the day. Actually, you know what? I marked it down wrong. Manning didn't have the interception. Painter did. I beg your pardon. I read that wrong. Anyways, so the reason why the interception and the fumble are both relevant, both taken, well, yeah, they represent basically the turnovers in the game. There you go. It's that simple. Going for a few other performances on the ground for the Colts. 10 carries, 28 yards, 2.8 a carry with a touchdown for Mike Hart. The only one for the Colts on the day, obviously. Fred Jackson had a big day, 33 carries, 212 yards for the Bills as he went 6.4 a carry. And running back Corey McIntyre, 4 carries, 32 yards, 8 yards a carry. The leading receiver, yes, Dallas Clark! He still showed up to play for a little while, 7 catches, 52 yards. Terrell Owens, whatever. Some things just don't go away. Anyway, Terrell Owens, T.O., had 4 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown. Lee Evans had 4 catches for 49 yards and a touchdown. And Fred Jackson had 2 catches for 15 yards and a touchdown. Likely T.O.'s final game as a Bill, in my ever-so-humble opinion. Bills also dominated time of possession by about 15 minutes. Fewer turnovers, one heck of a lot more time of possession, a lot more time on the ground, grinding it away. Bills own the Colts backups. Whoopie diddly crap. Weasel, talk to us about an important game that took place.
The Steelers needed a win at Miami to keep their slim playoff hopes alive, and they got it.
Actually, either team needed a win.
Dolphins' hopes were a lot more slimmer. They needed a lot more teams to lose, but...
A lot more buses to break down so the games would be played, exactly.
Exactly, but Steelers came out victorious 30-24. Big Ben Roethlisberger was 18 of 27, 66%, 220 yards, 3 touchdowns, no INTs. He was sacked 3 times and lost a fumble. Holmes did have a deep pass intercepted. In the receiving game, rookie wide receiver Mike Wallace, 2 catches for 64 yards with a 54-yard touchdown. Hines Ward had 8 for 61. Tight end Heath Miller had 5 for 56, 11.2 average with a tiptoe in the back of the end zone touchdown. Rashard Mendenhall had a 26-yard reception, and St. Helena Holmes had a 5-yard touchdown catch. In the running game, Rashard Mendenhall, 20 rushes for 94 yards, 4.7 average. Fast Willie Parker, 12 for 91, 7.6 average. Big Ben had 4 scrambles for 17 yards. For Miami, Chad Henne was 16 of 20, 80%, 140 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 INT. Pat White was 0 for 2 and left the game due to a concussion from a helmet-to-helmet hit. Tyler Thigpen came in and was 4 of 8 for 83 yards, 1 touchdown, and 2 INTs. Steelers got 3 sacks this game. For receiving, Devon Bess, 5 catches for 85 yards, 17 yards per reception with a touchdown. Tight end Anthony Bisano had 2 for 41. rookie wide receiver Brian Hartline had 2 for 34, and Greg Camarillo had 3 for 22. Ted Ginn had 3 for 20, and Lex Hilliard had an 11-yard touchdown reception.
Starting to come up big in these later games than they were without Ronnie Brown, and Ricky Williams is getting a little bit of a beating. He's gotten some good numbers lately.
Yeah, well, this game, Ricky Williams did have 12 rushes for 31 yards, 2.6 average. Pat Wade had 5 scrambles for 27 yards, 5.4 average. And Brian Hartline had 2 for 20 with a touchdown. After a Steelers kick by kicker Jeff Reed for a field goal, the Steelers were up 30-24 with only 40 seconds left in the game. Thickman's first pass was a deep one, intercepted, and Big Ben was able to take the kneel down.
Yeah. Thickman was looking great up until that single throw. It's that simple, so there you go.
Yeah, he had an interception to the left, and the Dolphins were making a comeback, and it was, I believe it was possibly red zone 9-10.
Yeah. So, for those of you who haven't seen the playoff picture yet, the Steelers, after this win, appear to have hope. And now, interrupting the suspenseful show, we're going to go to a commercial involving a game that didn't matter, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers facing off against the Atlanta Falcons. Although, in fairness to our friend Rizzo, it did matter because he had money on the game. Anyways, not that we promote gambling, but moving on. Quarterback for the Tampa Bay Bucs, Josh Freeman, 16 completions, 32 attempts, 50%, 174 yards, with a touchdown and 2 INTs. Matt Ryan for the Falcons had a much better day throwing the ball, 23 completions, 35 attempts, 66%, 232 yards, 223 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 INTs. Cadillac Williams was just basically kept in the garage by the Falcons, basically put a lock on it, and just put a boot on him, or whatever your car immobility analogy you wish to use. 19 carries, 40 yards, 2.1 a carry. Jason Snelling for the Falcons, however, much better day. 25 carries, 147 yards, about just short of 6 a carry. And Darius Norwood had 9 carries, 27 yards, exactly 3 yards a carry. In the air, leading receiver for the Bucks, Kellen Winslow once again. He's had a really big year. You could call him a personality issue if you want, but apparently his performance on the field for the Bucks, a big deal. Of course, in fairness, two of the quarterbacks who played for the Bucks were both, I don't know if they were both rookies, but they were both first-time starters, and that tends to be the favorite target for a younger quarterback. But in any case, 5 catches, 56 yards for Winslow. Cadillac Williams did contribute on the ground, so Carnell Williams had 4 catches for 35 yards. Antonio Bryant, with the Bucks' only touchdown on the day, 2 catches for 15 yards. Roddy White for the Falcons had 6 catches for 66 yards and a touchdown. Michael Jenkins had 4 catches for 45 yards. And then tight end, Justin Peel, 3 catches, 38 yards and a touchdown. Tony Gonzalez, however, did have 3 catches for 30 yards. The turnover count was actually against Atlanta. They turned the ball over 3 times to Tampa Bay's 2, one of them on a kick return. But with all the domination they did running the football, they were able to get about 11 yards difference in time of possession, able to still control the game, so much so that they could give up an extra turnover compared to the Bucks, and prevailed 20-10. Back to the games that actually matter. Now, with the Steelers winning, they needed the Jags to lose, they needed the Texans to lose, they needed the Broncos to lose. Since we don't cover the Broncos, they weren't a featured game this week. We'll go ahead and give that one away. They did lose, and they needed the Jets to lose. We'll move on with the Jags facing off against the Browns. Weedle, go.
The Browns finished the season strong, winning their 4th straight with a 23-17 victory over the visiting Jets. Derek Anderson was 7 of 11, 63%, 86 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT. He's not sacked this season. On the receiving game, tight end Robert Royal had 2 catches for 34 yards, 17-yard average. Jerome Harrison had 2 for 20. Tight end Evan Moore had 2 for 18. And rookie wide receiver Muhammad Massaquoi had a 14-yard reception. In the running game, Jerome Harrison, a bright spot for the Browns at least at the end of the season, 33 rushes, 127 yards, 3.8 average with a touchdown. Joshua Prince had 6 for 47, 7.8 average with a touchdown. Chris Jennings had 9 for 38, 4.2 average. In the passing game, David Garrard, 22 of 39, 56%, 202 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 INT, sacked 3 times. In the receiving game, rookie tight end Zach Miller, 8 catches for 69 yards.
Oh, well, no, you see, he didn't complete it. It's 69 yards and 2 scores.
All right.
See,
I
knew you were
going
to do that.
I got you. Rookie wide receiver Mike Thomas, 7 for 65. Rookie running back Rashard Jennings at 3 for 31. Mike Sims-Walker had 2 for 28. Running game, Maurice Jones-Drew, kid they call Mojo. 16 rushes, 82 yards, 5.1 average. Rashard Jennings had 3 for 9. And Garrard had 5 scrambles for 40 yards.
Okay, hold on a second. We're talking about 8 for 69 for 2 scores, all right, and then you talk about Mojo. That's funny. I don't care.
Awesome.
So, yeah, are you, that you don't
that was good. That one, yeah. That game, yeah.
Yeah, basically, difference here, 3 sacks by the Browns for the Jags, 0. The Jags defense has sucked all year. And they Browns had more opportunities to score and did so. They had 3 field goals on the day, 3 for 3. And then Josh Scobie was only 1 for 2 for the Jags. Fewer opportunities, and then they didn't even take advantage of them right. Jags are out of the way. Steelers still might have playoff hopes. Going to another commercial interrupting this suspenseful show. Again, the only other person who cared about the outcome of this game was Rizzo or anybody else who had money on it. No playoff implications whatsoever. Chicago facing off against the Lions. They won the day 37-23. Jay Cutler did not have a single interception this game.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. There's hope, right? Still, after this game, still the second best Bears franchise quarterback in yards ever. So I think the way the Bears need to look at that if they want silver lining is upside. Because next year, their receiver core won't be as young. We've seen the Devin Hester experiment be successful, so now we can craft him into more than just a good receiver, possibly, if I'm looking from the point of view of the Bears coach. We can craft him into a better than average receiver, more than just a good receiver. I don't want to say great. I don't think we can put him that far, but anyways. So his Cutler's numbers on the day against the Lions was 22 for 36, 61%, 276 yards, 4 touchdowns. At quarterback for the Detroit Lions, Dante Culpepper. See, Pepper himself, 23 completions, 34 attempts, 68%, 262 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an INT. I got to say this. I know I was covering Culpepper a lot for the Vikings back when this was still a publication, before you were my co-host and all that, and just about we got the show was when he started to decline. And I like C. Peppa as a nickname, but then he started to stink, so I couldn't really hype him up. And yeah. I just never really had a chance to share that before.
Aww.
Something to make this game matter. I'm trying.
All
anyways,
right.
Matt Forte for the Bears carried the ball 16 times for 101 yards, 6.3 a carry. Khalil Bell had 11 carries for 44 yards, 4 yards a carry, rookie running back. Maurice Morris, former Seahawk, 16 carries, 65 yards, 4.1 a carry. And in the passing game, after doing absolutely nothing for about the first 6 weeks, Greg Olsen still continuing to come on occasion for the Bears. 5 catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown. Devin Hester had 3 catches for 75 yards, speaking of the experiment. And then Devin, first time I've had to try to do this, Aroma Shadu, 5 catches, 46 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Oh,
yes,
good.
There you go. Oh, you like that?
Yeah, it was good.
I followed your example.
Yeah.
Are you proud of me?
Good something.
Desmond Clark, the other tight end, had 2 catches for 7 yards and a touchdown. On the day for the Lions, Calvin Johnson had 6 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. Patel Johnson, former Cardinal, 4 catches, 42 yards and a touchdown. Maurice Morris also had 5 catches for 41 yards. The difference maker here was 2 turnovers to the Bears 0. One of them directly turning both turnovers are by the Lions. The other one was on a punt return by Derek Williams. So we only really counted for one interception in the stats previously. The other one was a punt return. So here's another game that actually mattered for seeding implications. We knew the Vikings were going to make the playoffs. We knew that the Giants were already out. So the Vikings had to do their best to try to keep the first round bye, correct?
Yes.
So
Well, they needed this win to keep the number two alive.
Number two seed.
They had no chance at the number one, but they also needed the Eagles to lose. That was the 4 o'clock game. But the Vikings did take care of business, crushing the visiting Giants 44-7.
Crushing. Yes, that's 37 points. I thought you were a fan. Own that.
44, yeah, 37. You got it.
There you go.
Brett Favre was 25-31, 80%, 316 yards, 4 touchdowns, no INTs. Not sacked this game. He was bench late in the fourth quarter, and he was pissed off because of it.
No, he wasn't benched. He allowed himself to be taken out of the game. No, Chili, I say when I'm done. Okay, I'm done.
In came Tavares Jackson, 4-6, 42 yards. In the receiving game, Sidney Rice, Pro Bowler, 6 catches for 112 yards, 18.7 average with 2 touchdowns. Traded in for Shante Shanko, 7 for 94, 13.4 average with a touchdown. Rookie wide receiver Percy Harvin had 7 for 59. Did have a 52-yard touchdown catch brought back. It said he pushed off, but I just didn't see where. So,
whatever. It happens.
Bernard Berrien had 2 for 50. Jimmy Kleinsauster and Chester Taylor each had 2 for 17. And fullback Fahu Tahi had a 1-yard touchdown reception.
Let me ask you something. You ever met Kleinsauster? Would you call him Jimmy?
Jimmy?
He's a big dude. I wouldn't call him Jimmy. I mean, if you got that kind of cojones, go for it, bro. But
hey, Jimmy.
Yeah. See, yeah, now you know what I'm talking about. How you doing there, Jimmy? No, he's not. He's not something on some. He's not the child on a 50s sitcom or something. Although he might be old enough for that. But anyways.
In the running game, Adrian Peterson, no fumble this game. Awesome. 9 rushes for 54 yards, 6 yards for attempt.
There were no fumbles in overtime because there was no overtime period.
Wow. Albert Young, 10 attempts for 54 yards, 4 yards for attempt. Percy Harvin had a 22-yard run, and Chester Taylor had 7 for 12, 1.7 average. In the passing game for the Giants, Eli Manning lost a fumble, but was 17 of 23, 73%, 141 yards. No touchdowns, 1 INT. He was sacked 3 times. He was benched for the last series of the game. In came David Carr, who was 3 of 5 for 26 yards. In the receiving game, Steve Smith.
No, keep going.
Go for it.
Yeah, keep going. I'll catch up.
Had 10 catches for 57 yards, 5.7 average. Ahmad Bradshaw had 2 for 33. Derek Hagan had 2 for 31. And Danny Ware had 2 for 19. The running game, Ware had 5 for 22, 4.4 average with a touchdown rushing. And Bradshaw had 7 for 13, 1.9 average.
You know, something that's very funny, the list of quarterbacks in this game, you read through them, Favre, T-Jack, Eli Manning, and David Carr. One interception is thrown in this game. Who was it thrown by? Now, we all know, because you just read it, that it was by Eli Manning, but you could have won a shite load of money by putting that question forth.
Yeah.
Place your bets. Who's going to throw the one interception? Oh, you'd have made a killing. You'd have made a killing, I'm telling you. Anyways, going back to another game that was relevant to the playoffs, one of the things that the Steelers needed to happen was that the Patriots just go out and take care of the Houston Texans. Granted, the Patriots had basically very little, if anything, to play for. I mean, you know, I want to lock up the third seed, so that means I play Team X versus Team B. Texans needed this game and a whole lot of die rolls to fall their way to get a shot at the playoffs, and we're very desperate to see to it. They took care of their part of the bargain. Also, when doing so, they crushed the Steelers' chances, beating the Patriots 34-27. Unfortunate for the Steelers. The Texans, however, closest to the playoffs than they've ever been before.
Good for them.
Yeah, right. Good for them, bastard. No. Tom, the golden boy Brady, was in and out of the game, different points, but he went 17 for 26 on the day, 65% for 186 yards, and an INT. Did get a little bit banged up. There's reports that he may have injured his index finger on his throwing hand and have a fibrous of some sort. You know how the Patriots are when it comes to injuries, so whatever. Anyways, quarterback Brad Hoyer, his backup, went 8 for 12 on the day, 67%, 71 yards, with an INT that went back to the house for 6. And if it couldn't get any worse for Hoyer, he also had a fumble on the day in exchange with Fred Taylor, also for a touchdown. Matt Schaub, who I came to find out checking stats, is now the official league leader in completions attempts and passing yards in the NFL in 2009. Very interesting. Mm. 24 for 39, 63% on the day. Now, the Patriots lost the game, but their biggest loss, even aside from Brady getting beat up a little bit, was an ACL, MCL tear by receiver Wes Welker. Going into this game, led the league in completion. He tried to make a cut. His knee didn't react good. Going to be big trouble for next week. Going through the rest of the stats here, Fred Taylor had 7 carries for 33 yards, 4.7 carry with 2 touchdowns. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis for the Patriots had 4 carries for 22 yards, 5.5 carry. And Arian Foster of the Texans, 20 carries, 119 yards, 5.9 carry for 2 touchdowns. Yes, Weezer, go ahead and say it.
the Arian Nation.
That's right. In the interest of political correctness on this show, a friend of the show has suggested that we have a fan club in Texas known as the Arian Nation.
Which regards to running back?
Arian Foster.
Awesome.
Let me ask you this. Since Welker was hurt very early in the game, is Julian Edelman still the imposter?
He may have had something to do with it then.
Well, he earned his performance on the day. 10 completions, 103 yards. Randy Moss, he's still trying now. 5 catches, 75 yards. And then tight end Ben Watson, 3 catches, 32 yards. Top receivers for the Texans included Joel Dresden, 6 catches, 81 yards, and a touchdown. Andre Johnson had 6 catches for 65 yards. And then Jacoby Jones, 5 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown. Also had a drop. That's the one blemish on Schaub's stats for the day. So that'll do it for the game coverage. But before anybody goes, oh, Wes Welker shouldn't have been playing the game, man. No, they should have blown him up. It was within the first, it wasn't the first quarter. So these are reps that, even if it was preseason, for example, he would have been taking. So it's just a freak accident. It's going to happen. It's football, kids.
Yeah, sometimes accidents happen where the players, they play not to get injured. That's when things like that can happen.
Weasel, that's a great point. If you play football to not get injured, you play apprehensive, you're more likely to get hurt. That's a great point. I mean, if you're not bringing it all the way, guess what? Your opponent is, and he's going to hurt you because you're not.
Yep.
That's a great point. I'm glad you said that. What do you want to do next? You want to do superlatives next, or do you want to do playoffs?
Let's keep it going with the playoffs.
Okay, playoffs? So, now the Texans thought they had a shot until the Bengals just lied down in front of the Jets and let the Jets have their way with them. 37-0 or something stupid. Just take it all, Bengals. Oh, wait. Well, yeah, the Jets are in the playoffs and they'll be playing the Bengals again next week. Well, actually, excuse me, I'm getting that wrong. They're not playing the Jets next week, are they?
The Bengals are playing the Jets, dude.
Okay. I thought I was getting that wrong.
Yeah, it's a rematch.
I need to have confidence in myself. I knew that, too. And I'm like, wait, I'm wrong. Oh, God. Help me.
It's not like it's the playoffs or anything.
Well, no, that's the thing. I had it right. I just gotta bleed. I feel the pressure of the playoffs, Weasel. Shit. Ah. Anyways. All right, let's look at the matchup between the Jets and the Bengals. Now, I think the thing that's going to still be true for the Jets, despite playing starters or playing a team at full effort or any of that, is that they have one of the best O-lines in the league. Nick Mangold, Pro Bowl center, and Alan Faneca, Pro Bowler, been a Pro Bowler in the past, and he's won yet again as a Jet his first year there, I believe. He was a recent acquisition. And then DeBrickashaw Ferguson, also on the other end, very solid, a solid player on the O-line. That, in addition to their defense, which blitzes you pretty much every single solitary way you can think of, and an instituting receiver, Brad... I don't think it was Brad.
Smith?
Hmm?
Smith?
I'm going to check, but I always think it was Brad Miller, and I know that's wrong, but we'll get back to who that is.
Tight end.
Sorry?
It sounds like a tight end.
Brad Miller? It's Zach Miller. I don't know. But anyways, I'll be looking that up. Let me awesome. Keep going now. Let me keep going. Keep interrupting. Shoot. Anyways, so what I look at, you got a really awesome defense against... you got a really awesome defense against an offense that's pretty solid. I mean, you got Ocho Cinco, you got Lavernius Cole, their running core got really good, and then, oh, by the way, Cedric Benson was out, but here's this guy, Larry Johnson, maybe I heard of him, just saying, you know. So, he's a bit of a toss-up. Yes, Carson Palmer is a better quarterback than Sanchez, but he's playing against a tougher defense. You know, I mean, we can dance around this all we'd like. But here's a question I would ask you, Lugo. Why do you think Sanchez throws picks?
Well, I think that's maybe due to, usually for rookie quarterbacks, I think the reason why they do so good early on is because you have no tape on them. Like Josh Freeman, I mean, he played against...
His
first game was against they're literally a top five defense of the Packers. And he was like 2-3 touchdowns, no INTs, and he played great. But it's just...
Great!
Nobody had any film on him, and then I think reality set in.
Later on he had a week where you're throwing interceptions before they can even get the defensive starting lineup on the
like, oh screen. Man, he threw an INT already. Ugh.
Put the film away, damn it!
No, so, I believe it's just having film on the guy, and that's my view on it. So,
and that's a good view. Maybe that's it. The reason why I asked you wasn't to put you on the spot is because I really don't know. If you got an O-line this good, how are you effing up? You got Tony Richardson, who's like one of the best fullback veterans ever. How?
Yeah, what's pretty cool about Tony Richardson is he's blocked for, I think, 5 1,000-yard rushers.
Mm-hmm. So, Thomas Jones now being included in the category.
Thomas Jones, he has a best season. He has like
when you're behind
1,250.
When you're behind,
like
when you're behind Richardson, Tony Richardson, Thomas Jones would say it's not unusual to run 1,000 yards. That's a joke for old people. But anyways, So I was gonna say something a little different. I think it's a Sanchez problem. I think it's an ego problem. I think he skated so easily in his first 4 games that he started to think, oh, I'm the jam summon. I was like, uh-oh. Personally, if I'm the Bengals, if I'm the Bengals defensive coordinator, I'm watching the Jets film. I'm going to use every single solitary blitz package they use against me against them.
Yeah.
Because the key to winning the game, in my humble opinion, obviously, get the rookie to F up. Do it.
Yeah.
It's that simple to me. I mean, X factors for the Jets are don't give up the big play that the Bengals are capable of getting on the ground or in the air. It's that simple.
I think the X factor is going to be cornerback Darrell Revis.
Okay, why?
The thing about him, he's like one of those players that, you know, players around the league will call him, you know, he's like one of the best out there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of his stats, he's played against wide receivers such as, I think, Colston, Moss.
Twice.
Ocho Cinco.
Ted Ginn.
Whatever.
But T.O. twice.
T.O. twice. And I think the best that any one of them has gotten is, I think, 35 yards.
Yeah, no,
so
he's
been shutting them down. And I was looking at the stat line, and I was checking out. I was like, oh, Ocho Cinco didn't play. I think he did.
He played.
He got shut down, though.
He played early in the game. Ocho Cinco, I don't think he played much beyond the first half because he slipped in the earlier game. And there was a couple times he did get open on Revis, and then he dropped it. So if it were me, since I watched at least the portion of the game that Ocho Cinco was in, I'd say push. Especially considering that, you know, he got open on Revis with a hurt leg. Granted, the number of balls thrown to him was only like 4 or 5 in the first half. So really, is that something you can make a decision? It's an incomplete for the matchup. Basically, if I'm Revis, I'm saying to Ocho Cinco, okay, let's put off your bet till next week when I shut you down in the playoffs and it matters. When I shut you down in the playoffs, then you'll have to change your name back to Chad Johnson as you bet in week 17.
Really?
You didn't hear about that?
I did not.
Ocho Cinco said, if Darryl Revis shuts me down, I will change my name back to Chad Johnson.
It wasn't week 17 he said that.
No.
Ooh.
It was for week 17. Now, in light of the fact that this was kind of a push, I don't think he should be forced to change it either, but, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, quite. So, now that we've talked that game over a little bit, it's time for the immortal question. Who you got?
Actually, I'm picking if the Jets, if they shut down the passing offense for the Bengals, and they get the running game going, don't put too much on Sanchez, 24-20 Jets, even though this game is in Cincy, the Week 17 game was in New York.
I like that you at least made the game close. And trust me, I want desperately to pick the Jets. I do. I see the way they play, and I like watching them play. I know that for the longest time, New York fans, Jets fans have been, oh, how the Jets are going to screw us over this year. What are they going to do? I had them one game out of the playoffs in preseason, and I was technically right. The Bengals just laid down and died on me. Okay? That's the way I see it. You can tell me I'm wrong all you want to. Feel free to comment www.thestudentofthegame.com, whatever. But I can't pick the Jets to win this game. You talked about them stopping the pass, which I feel very confident they will do with this excellent blitz package and Darryl Revis at work. However, can they do that and stop the running game when they're playing everybody? Can Sanchez survive when they're actually playing their entire defense? Because a number of stars on the defense for the Bengals did not see action that game. Due to injury or just from not being played. I mean, you know, Marvin Lewis was smart enough to know that he's got a game next week against the same team. Nothing to gain, nothing to play for. It's not like he had an undefeated season potentially, Bill Polian. But I in order to win, the Jets will need at least 3 big plays to set up a score. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm picking Bengals. I like your 24-20 score. We'll put it that. I didn't put a score on my picks, so I'm not going to have them, but that's just me. Staying in the AFC, Ravens-Pats. Now, you got the comparison here. Yeah, obviously, Brady is in a better system, a better fit in his system than Flacco is as a quarterback in Baltimore. Fine. The Ravens obviously have a better running game. Fine. Receiver core, still in favor of the Pats, but here's my whole thing. The Pats played the Jets earlier in the season. You'll see where I'm going with this. Just follow me. A team led by Bart Scott, former Raven, and their head coach, former Raven coach Rex Ryan. Patriots were without one Wes Welker, lost to the Jets. Later that same season, Welker playing, Jets get owned. Coincidence? I think not. I don't know, other than Jerry Rice himself, if I've ever actually given this much credit to a receiver to make a difference in the game, but because the Patriots' running game is so abysmal, because their defense is so damn desperate that they got a 40-year-old at linebacker and Junior Seau, I'm a little worried for them. Fortunately, I'm not a Patriots fan. Now, if I'm the Patriots and I'm trying to beat the Ravens, the key is to spread them out. Because, as we've seen, right, Vikings fan, when you spread them out, they're more vulnerable to balance attack, they give up more big plays. But now with Welker out, the Pats are less able to spread. Big issue. X-factor player for me in this game, one tight end, Ben Graham. He's going to be kind of a big deal. because without Welker there, the burden will fall to him. It'll be basically between him and the other check down, usually Kevin Falk at running back. Yeah. And if I'm the Ravens, you can't give up big plays, obviously. Crush Brady, that's the answer. Play good defense. The Ravens do that. Granted, they're not as good as they used to be on D, but they still ain't half bad, period. I am picking, I don't usually call four being, five being four an upset, but in this case, I'm calling the upset Ravens over the Patriots.
All right, well, the X factor for me is the running game for the Ravens against the Patriots, because Flacco, he's a good quarterback. He's still relatively young, but he can make plays. But I don't think if they put too much pressure on Flacco, I don't think that would be good. So Ray Rice and McGahee will be the key. And I'm actually for this game picking the Patriots, 17-13.
On the strength of?
It's going to be, I would say, I think Brady will be all right. I mean, he's kind of struggled, but it's without Wes the Weapon Walker, I think Moss will be able to come up big.
With, keep in mind, with the weapon holstered, all they got to worry about is Moss.
Yeah.
That's why I made my X-Factor Ben Graham tight end. But anyway.
Moss is still a
I just wanted to make the weapon holster to come in.
Yeah.
Yes, I never accused Moss of not trying this year. I mean, you know, let's be real. Anyway. So speaking of rematches, the Packers will be facing off against the Cardinals in the AFC. Putting this game together, I have said the Packers are a trap game. Guess what? So are the stupid Cardinals. I mean, you don't ever know what you're going to get out of the Cardinals. The Packers are a trap game because they were crap because their offensive line was torn apart. The Cards are a trap game because they always have the potential to be crap or good. See last year when they got just completely owned by the Panthers last year. And we were talking, texting over while we were watching games last night and seeing how much the Cardinals just kind of just stunk. And oh, by the way, I think, what was it, Warner threw like, what, six passes? I don't remember, but Leinart was dominating that game in terms of throwing. We even had a St. Pierre sighting at quarterback for the Cardinals. So, Warner and Rodgers at quarterback's kind of a push. The running games are kind of a push. The receiver core, even though Bolden has report of injury, I think is in still favor of the Cardinals. The defense is kind of a push. So then what the heck's going to the difference going to be? It's going to be Kurt freaking Warner. The difference, the X factor, is going to be the Packers' defense. Can they pester Warner? I don't think they can. Cardinals spread the ball out. Packers D is slow. You know this for a fact. Cards take it. Another upset.
Interesting. The thing about this game, they got a linebacker who's I don't think he's going to get Rookie of the Year, but he's been all
right. Talking about Laurinaitis, right? No, Clay Matthews.
Clay Matthews. And he's been actually getting pressure at the quarterback, and he's got 10 sacks this year, which is pretty good. But him getting pressure on Warner will be key. But the thing about, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I thought the Packers were done because he was just getting killed out there early in the season. Yeah, I think it was like halfway through at the I think with only about like 6 or 7 games through, he had like 30 sacks. He was sacked 30 times, which is pretty ridiculous. He was on pace to break David Carr's record. pretty much it's the Packers. I believe it's going to be the Packers need to protect Rodgers, and they've been doing that the past month.
Yeah, that's so, a good call.
But I'm going to give this one to the Packers, 27-13.
Okay. If the Cardinals spread, you think they'll still be able to stop it?
Yeah, I mean, the Packers do have a decent defense. They lost Al Harris, but Charles Woodson's good.
Oh yeah, Charles Woodson's a little banged up too. But even still, their DBs aren't the problem for me.
Yeah,
it's their D line. Yeah, they got Matthews. Matthews is good. I like him a lot. I considered him for Rookie of the Year. No, he didn't get it for me either. But he was in the running. And, yeah, Anyways, unless they can stop the cards spread out, they got nothing.
Yep.
Now for what would have been the hardest game to pick last week, I give you the hardest game to pick this week. I call it the hardest game to pick last week, even though the Eagles were shut out in a spanking against the Cardinals. Or excuse me, Cowboys. And we get to do it all again. Same city, same teams. Woo!
Exactly.
First playoff game in the new Dallas Stadium. Wasn't sure if there would be a playoff game in the new Dallas Stadium this year at some point in the season. At quarterback, I think it's pretty much a push, if anything, a slight advantage to Romo. I think Romo is confident again. I think Romo is going to be out here with a purpose, the likes of which we have not seen since the evil and daunting Seahawks game, you know, where he mishandled the kick that would make a difference in the game, blah, 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 for those who don't know. I think Westbrook being back from the concussion is a big deal against a Marion Barber and a Felix Jones. I think the big difference is going to be big playability. The Eagles got it. The Cowboys got it on defense. You know, Deshaun Jackson's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. Brent Celek, he's a big deal. Personally, I haven't seen the tight ends for the NFC, but I'll say this. I think he belongs there ahead of Jason Witten. Not to say that Witten's bad, but...
That's going to make the plays all year.
No, by the way, here's this guy named Miles Austin who decided to emerge for the Cowboys as well. But the difference here is the Eagles, I think, have a weaker defense. Not a bad defense, but a weaker defense. And they have a different defense. Both defenses are strong. They have a different defense than the Cowboys. And keep in mind my fat man bias here. Cowboys have an excellent front and an above-average secondary. Eagles have an excellent secondary and an above-average front behind defensive end Trent Cole, linebacker Jeremiah Trotter, who is aging. So, for me, the excellent defensive front is always more important, because if you sack the quarterback all day, if you pressure McNabb, if you keep McNabb from running, all of that, you won't have time to throw the ball down the field. So, yeah. So for me, the X factors are obviously the quarterback to make fewer mistakes. Thank you, John Madden. I think it's Romo's confidence. And the only way that the Cowboys can lose this game is if they don't play 60 minutes on defense and contain the big play from Deshaun Jackson.
What was interesting about this game is that the other two games this week, the Jets and Cincinnati and Green Bay against Arizona, the thing about those two games is the teams didn't really have much to play for, those other ones.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, the Eagles were playing for the number two seed.
A chance to stay home.
If they would stay home, they would get the bye week, and they would have the division game would be a home game.
Mm-hmm.
But because they lost this game, they're the number six seed, which is ridiculous. They went from being possibly the number two to being away number six. So, and Dallas needed this win to get the division,
which they did,
and they did. So these teams were both playing hard, and Cowboys just crushed them. But I at least see it as closer. He's going to be the Cowboys shutting down. Mostly it's going to be Deshaun Jackson.
Big plays. Period.
So, yeah. So I see the Cowboys winning 31-20.
I got to tell you, I see the same thing. Deshaun Jackson was kept from making a big play for one set of 60 minutes already. I'm predicting that the Cowboys are going to be able to do it for 120 minutes. A bold prediction, but I got it right here. I see the Cowboys winning as well. I think that's the only game we matched on.
I think we matched on the Packers.
No, I picked the Cards.
Oh. Whatever.
So anyways, speaking of other places where we may be alike or different depending on the situation, it's time for our end of season awards. Now, we were supposed to have a guest host this week, but due to unfortunate circumstances, the man has a family. The wife was sick. He had to take care of the kids. But he will be with us here in spirit as I have his picks right in front of me. That's right. Chris Rankins. Rankins Rankings. I've been waiting all season to say
that.
Rankins Rankings here before me. MVP Weasel, who you got?
I was going to pick Brett Favre just to piss you off.
Because you would. But then you got real and realized...
Yeah, I gotcha. I picked Peyton Manning. Colts were undefeated through the first 14. He made, you know, the stars out of Austin Colley, Pierre Garçon.
Now you're taking my point from me.
The French guy.
Right.
And, and he had 29 touchdowns, 59 TDs, you know. And he did lead the NFL with 4,770 yards.
And the note here that Chris leaves next to his selection in his email that you did put in 8 fourth quarter comebacks on the season.
Nice.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
More than half of the victories. Would have been only half, possibly, if Bill Polian actually played the games, that little hippie.
Yeah.
By the way, Bill Polian, not a friend of this show. Dallas Clark, friend of this show. Bill Polian, not a friend of this show. Okay, moving on. Offensive player, Weasel, go.
I mean, I think everybody's got to pick Chris Johnson.
Oh, triumvirate too!
Sixth running back in history to reach 2,000 yards, 5.6 yards per carry.
Which, by the way, third all time amongst the six 2,000 yard characters.
11 straight 100 yard games, included last week too. Most yards from scrimmage in NFL history beat Marshall Faulk.
Beating Marshall Faulk's record, correct? 2509 on the year.
Only running back with 2,000 yards rushing and 500 yards receiving, and he faced 8-9 defenders in the box all season.
The stat I wanted to throw in is there was a 62-yard run he got for a touchdown. Call back for one of the most BS holding calls I've ever seen in my life, and that would have only increased his prowess. His total yards for the year would have been 2,068. It wouldn't have changed his placement at all in terms of his spot on the list or anything like that.
But it looks better.
But, right, he would have been that much closer to 6 yards a carry.
Yeah.
In fairness, O.J. Simpson did his in 14 games, and so did Eric Dickerson. So, yeah, but this is still awesome. The point that Chris has in here as well, he made up 44% of the team's total yardage. 2509 for Chris Johnson out of the 5696 by the Titans as a team. That's a stat, ladies and gentlemen. That's a stat. Moving on to defensive player. Weasel, go.
I should pick a rival. Charles Woodson, quarterback for the Packers. Found the NFL first with 9 INTs. Got 4 forced fumbles. 3 defensive touchdowns. And the Packers, number 2 ranked D. They're number 5 passing. And that's even with Al Harrison.
I looked at him. I thought very hard of him. And then I took an extra perspective, or you could argue that I was being a homer, one of the two, and was forced and compelled to pick Patrick Willis. I saw the Niners have a shot at making the playoffs. I saw the Niners be 2 rip-off wins away from being in the playoffs. Thank you, Brady Favre. Anyways,
Favre magic, sorry.
Granted, these were the same dumbasses who shot themselves in the foot by losing to the Seahawks late.
Yeah.
But that's a different topic. They're one, Favre, and don't call it magic, it's luck. Magic implies intent, he had none. And a desperation attempt by Joseph Addai for a touchdown, as the Niners held Peyton Manning to 0 touchdowns on the day. All while having virtually no offense, save Frank Gore. Yeah, I know that Vernon Davis is a tight end. I'm not sure if he made the Pro Bowl. I think he did. If he didn't, it's a crime. But that passing attack was still not that great. I mean, here's Vernon Davis got a lot of touchdowns, and Michael Crabtree's got some touchdowns, and because just the quarterback situation. He, being the captain of the defense that propelled this team that should have made the playoffs, amongst a young squad, I might add. Oh, by the way, led the league in tackles. Bam. There's my pick. And Chris matches me, also mentioning that he had 4 sacks, 3 interceptions, with a touchdown for an INT, and 11 passes defended, quite a bit, for a linebacker. Anyways, offensive rookie, Weasel, go.
Yeah.
Percy Harvin, that's okay. I picked him too.
I did pick Percy Harvin. I mean, he was tied for first among rookies with 790 yards receiving, 6 receiving touchdowns, 2 off of kickoffs, and he did make the plays we needed.
All the consideration we had for various players in the midseason awards took themselves off the list. I felt like we were left basically to either Harvin or Noshawn Moreno. I picked Harvin because I saw him change more games personally, rather than be just a factor. Like, oh no, Vikings might actually lose this game. Here comes a pick for, or here comes a return for a touchdown. And honestly, if it weren't for a miscue by the Steelers, Percy Harvin, despite a crappy effort by Jeff Reed to try to tackle him, made a game-changing play there too. And oh, by the way, there's been a number of games where he's had more than 40 yards receiving.
Yeah.
Chris has here Noshawn Moreno with stats, 947 yards rushing, 213 yards receiving, and 9 touchdowns as a rookie. I almost picked him, but like I said, Harvin had more game-changing moments, I'd say. But it makes more sense to call Noshawn Moreno 1A, and we'll leave it at that. Defensive rookie, Weevil, go.
Brian Cushing, Texans outside linebacker.
Stop matching.
134 combined tackles, 87 solo, 5 sacks, one safety, and 4 INT. Pretty good for a linebacker.
Okay, I gotta stop. Not just good for a linebacker, among rookies, tied for second.
There you go.
Just for the record, Chris also has Brian Cushing. A few of his stats here in front of me. Let's see, on the year, yeah, 4 INTs when he went over that second, tied for second among rookies. He had 5 sacks, that's tied for third among rookies. He led the league in assists on a tackle, which I don't normally think is a big deal, but as a linebacker, it's proving that he's getting to every play like he should as a rookie, you know. And then 87 solo tackles, second amongst rookies. 14 passes defended. Chris has 10 here. I'm sorry, buddy, for 14.
No.
But fifth overall amongst rookies. He's in the top 5 in basically all the important defensive categories amongst rookies. And oh, by the way, also caused the safety. Let's round that out.
Yeah.
So, there you go. So going to we'll do Chris's ordering here. Coach of the year, Weasel, go.
I'm picking North Turner. After a 2-3 start, the Chargers are still on an 11-game winning streak. They got a first round bye.
Okay, not the worst pick ever. Let me tell you why it's crap. Where do they play?
In the AFC West.
Who's their opponents?
Yeah, they got the Raiders. Yeah, they got the Chiefs. And
twice Denver. Each, yeah, I might add.
Right.
And now, granted, they did get owned by the Broncos for the first time back when the Broncos were still good, didn't have film really on Josh McDaniels' scheme, whatever. That all changed later when the Chargers said, oh, you want my title? I don't think so. Took it back and basically took the team I like to watch play in the NFL the least up to the point where they could be propped up to a second round bye. Look, no. Okay? The Bengals are superior to them. All these not to rant too much, but all these people who say the Chargers are the best team in the NFL are smoking the crack. Okay? We'll leave it at that. Chris has who I thought was in second place. Rex Ryan of the Jets. In addition to all his D was number one in the league, giving up the least amount of yards.
I believe it's also points. Points given up. They're number one and two.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
And that's, I think that one's more...
certainly more relevant.
Yeah. So they got both of them, so there you go.
And all this, yeah, less than 16 points a game is what Rankin has here. And another thing I didn't think of, without star D tackle, Chris Jenkins. Their record from last year was a game better, but big games were won part with the coach and having a solid offensive line. The good defense, honestly, I mean, Bart Scott put in place, various other players brought in, put in place. Kind of has a little bit to do with the coach, just a bit, possibly. Mm-hmm. I say Bart Scott specifically because he followed him from the Ravens. And you got to give a little bit of credit to the way he handles press conferences. funny and serious. He says all the right things all the time. I enjoy listening to him. And oh, by the way, he's not going to get anybody in any trouble. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. But my pick, Marvin Lewis, coach of the Bengals. Now, I know this last game makes me look bad with that, but I saw the HBO special Hard Knocks in the preseason. I saw what this team looked like when the season started. I saw how they were barely able to scrape past the Broncos on a fluky. Am I getting that backwards?
No.
The Broncos got the fluke. And just basically one of the ugliest football games I've ever seen in my life. All of a sudden, fast forward, they've swept the entire AFC North, something I thought I'd never see in my lifetime, at least not with this current batch of players. And wow. You know, that's a turnaround. And oh, by the way, and with all due respect to Chris Henry, with players who in the past have been issues, with players who draw attention and distraction, i.e. Ocho Cinco, still able to keep a composure. Ocho Cinco not only respects Marvin Lewis, but is still a little afraid of him. And is still able to do it just enough to where they can succeed. Yeah, that simple. Marvin Lewis, baby. Word. So, going to most improved player, Weasel, go.
Most improved. I would say it would be... I would say Sidney Rice was... He was under 1,000. He was injured. But he's over 1,200. And he is... in the Pro Bowl.
So, yeah. I mean, we normally call this comeback, but... you know. Not something you usually consider amongst younger players, but most improved comeback, same thing. You know what? You know what's going to be in common with you and one of Chris's famous favorite cartoon characters? Homers! Yeah.
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 Awesome.
Of course, he picked Sidney Rice as well, so I can't accuse him of being Homer. For much the same reason. After the knee injury last year, bounced back, 1,300 yards receiving. Oh, by the way, Pro Bowl! Just saying.
Yeah.
For me, it was one, Brett Favre. That's right.
Wow, I was going to say that as
the
a joke.
hear me out, the first two-time comeback award winner, and it's all on the strength of one stat. The quarterback to throw the fewest interceptions in the NFL, Vince Young. That's not fair. He played only half the season. The next quarterback to only have 7 interceptions compared to Vince Young's 6, Aaron Rodgers. But tied with him is Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Enough said.
I think Favre has 4 or 5 more touchdowns thrown than Rodgers.
And I'm sorry, who's their receiver corps and who's their running back situation? Look, Favre has a better offense. He's better. I'm just saying. I'm trying to give you boy props and you're standing in the way.
I'm just saying that the Packers wide receiver corps is good.
They're not. That's true.
Heck good.
Actually, you're right. The Packers receiver corps is better.
Their offense isn't. All right.
Thank you for that correction.
Yeah.
Going to most improved. No, we did most improved. I'm sorry. Going to biggest disappointment. Weasel, go.
Biggest disappointment? I would say the Steelers 5-game losing streak. When you lose to the teams like the Raiders, Chiefs, and Browns, really?
Okay. I'm calling both you and Chris out as homers. You say the Steelers. He says the Giants. Also going, starting out 5-0. Starting out 5-0 and then going to 4 losses straight. And then losing 6 out of 8, something like that. Even before going into week 16. But let me clear both y'all up as a neutral party to my pick. You go 6-0, then you go 2-8. You go 6-0 and you end up with a record just as good as the 49ers. And miss the playoffs in arguably the weakest, if not the weakest, division in the league. I refer to you, sir, to the Denver Broncos. That's right, I said it! The Denver Broncos. Biggest disappointment. Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And who was it they lost to in the last week of the game?
Chiefs.
The dang Kansas City Chiefs. Sounds familiar, right, Steelers fan?
Yeah.
Now, granted, it was because Brandon Marshall was pulled, and because Tony Scheffler was hurt, because Eddie Royal was hurt, and all of that. But damn.
But still.
No, not but still. But damn.
Yeah.
leading to the biggest surprise, our final category. Weasel, go.
I was hoping you would do after you picked Coach of the Year, and you would go on to the biggest surprise. I did pick the Bengals. Finish off 10-6 and won the division. I expected them to be mediocre at that.
Guess what? We match. Chris has, the biggest surprise being the performance of Ricky Williams. After being forced to perform as the solo back, essentially, with a little help from Lex Hilliard, in fairness, Ricky Williams has 1,121 yards, 11 TDs, 13 total, 2 passing completions, and also notes, without failing a drug test. So, if you would like to make any adjustments to any of our playoff predictions, opinions on Week 17, or our player superlatives, go ahead and leave us a comment, www.thestudentofthegame.com, or you can check us out on iTunes, or follow us on Twitter at username the SOTG. We'll see you next week after we see some playoff action.